Chapter 22.
I felt like the fire left me no choice. How could I give up? Surrender was unimaginably more dangerous than struggling for survival. The typesetting industry didn't pick up till early fall, but I found work catch as catch can. By September, I signed a lease on a tenement apartment just above Canal Street. It was a pretty big one-bedroom railroad flat, but it was filthy. I didn't have the energy to clean it when I moved in. I figured I'd do a little at a time. I bought an air mattress, a blanket, and a pillow. That's what I really needed in the apartment. It was a safe place to sleep, that's all. My first night there, I crawled out onto the fire escape. I could see a few green trees lining a tiny strip of something people in this city call a park. The traffic backed up for the bridge to Brooklyn had thinned. The music of mariachi and mandarin melded in the night. Three little girls sat on a fire escape across the street, combing each other's hair as they sang pop tunes from Hong Kong. A man and a woman fought bitterly in an apartment below me. I tensed at the sound of a crash. It was followed by an even more ominous silence. From the open living room window of my next door neighbour's apartment, I could hear the steady hum of a sewing machine. The faint glow of the city softened the darkness of night. If there were still stars in the sky, they weren't within my sight. I saw my next door neighbour a month later. As I unlocked my apartment, she opened hers. I said hello before I even looked up. She didn't answer. Her face startled me. It was badly bruised on one side like a rainbow, yellow, red, blue. Her hair was outrageously crimson. I could tell that womanhood had not come easily to her. It wasn't just her large Adam's apple or her broad, big-boned hands. It was the way she dropped her eyes and rushed away when I spoke to her. Every day I saw others like me in this city, enough of us to populate our own town. But we only acknowledged each other with a furtive glance, fearful of calling attention to ourselves. Being alone in public was painful enough. Two could find themselves smack in the centre of an unbearable sideshow. We didn't seem to have any of our own places to gather in community, to immerse ourselves in our own ways and our own languages. But now I had a neighbour who was different like me. As weeks passed, I became intrigued by the sounds and smells coming from her apartment. She sewed endlessly. She loved Miles Davis. And whenever she opened her oven, the hall outside her door filled with the most tantalising aromas. One Saturday afternoon, I found her clutching two huge bags of groceries and fumbling with the downstairs front door lock. I pulled out my key. "Here, let me." She didn't say thank you. She hurried ahead of me on the stairs. "Can I help you carry those?" I offered. "Do I look weak to you?" she asked. I stopped on the stairs. "No, where I come from is just a sign of respect, that's all." She continued up the stairs. "Well, where I come from," she called out, "men don't reward women for pretending to be helpless." Once I heard her apartment door close, I kicked the stair in anger and frustration. All day long, I sat in my apartment rehearsing how I would introduce myself to her. I stood outside her door and listened to the Motown music blaring on her stereo before I finally got up the courage to knock. Someone turned the music down as she cracked open the door. I lifted my hand to silence her before she could speak. "I'm sorry to bother you," I said. "But I didn't make a very good impression before. I know you think I'm a man, but I'm not. I'm a woman." She sighed and unhooked the chain. "Listen," she opened her door a little wider. "I don't need a gender identity crisis on my doorstep. This is my home and I'm with friends. Please understand, I really don't want to be bothered." I heard a drag queen's voice from inside her apartment. "Who's that, Ruth? Oh, he's cute, let him in." "Tanya, please," Ruth silenced the drag queen with a glare. I could see someone else peering at me from the living room. Ruth was visibly annoyed at the curious way her friends and I were checking each other out. "I'm not trying to be rude," she told me, "but let me make myself clear. This is my home. I do not want to be annoyed." I rested my hand on her doorframe. "But I need to talk to you." She glared at my hand. I removed it. "But I don't need to talk to you. Excuse me." She closed her door. I had no choice but to give Ruth the wide berth she demanded. I shivered in a blanket on my fire escape, unwilling to let go of the day. The temperature had risen to 75 degrees, unusual in late October. The chilly evening breeze still smelled fresh by Manhattan standards. Ruth poked her head out of her living room window. "Oh," she sounded startled. "I didn't know you were out here. I'm going to close my window because it's cold." I sighed and looked up at the sky. She spoke more softly. "It's a beautiful night, isn't it?" The shades of gender in her voice were intricate, like mine. I smiled. "That's a harvest moon up there tonight." Ruth laughed. "What's a city slicker like you know about harvests?" Her words and tone angered me. I was sick of being everybody's other. But part of me still needed Ruth's friendship so damn much, so I took a moment before I answered and spoke without anger. "I know how it feels to stand in a field, in the pitch dark under a billion stars, with no sound except the music of crickets and cicadas." Ruth nodded as she stared at the moon. I leaned my head back against the brick. "And I know how a white-capped river looks when it's racing toward the falls, how it's translucent and green at the place where it bends over the edge, like bottle glass when it washes up in the surf." I smiled at Ruth. "And I know your hair is as red as wild sumac in early autumn." Ruth looked at me wide-eyed. "What a lovely thing to say. You're from upstate. I can tell by your accent. Me too." I nodded. "I know." Ruth's whole demeanour toward me changed. She seemed ready to open her door partway for me. That's when I discovered I was still hurt and angry at her earlier rejections. Before she could say another word, I told her good night and climbed back inside my living room. I leaned my head against the windowsill and watched the moon continue to rise over Manhattan. I never would have known that Ruth was doing the same thing only a few feet away from me if I hadn't heard the scratch of a match and smelled the smoke from her cigarette. I didn't see her again for a couple of months. I think she went away for a few weeks over the holidays because I didn't hear music or sewing, and the hallway went back to smelling like a urinal. I got tired of sleeping on an air mattress and I bought a bed from the Salvation Army. I also got a used record and tape player that was so beat up I wouldn't care if someone stole it. One Saturday afternoon, after weeks of working overtime, I woke up late. My apartment looked so filthy it disgusted me. The daylight had thinned to grey by the time I bundled up to go out for cleaning supplies. Ruth and I opened our doors at the same moment and looked away in embarrassment. I held back to let her go ahead of me. From the landing, she called up to me, "I hope this doesn't sound rude, but what was the music you were playing yesterday? Do you remember?" "Why?" I called down to her. "Is this an indirect way of saying it was too loud?" There was a long silence. "No," she said. "I liked it, that's all. Do you mind me asking?" If it sounded African, it was King Sunny Aid. "Thank you," she said curtly. I heard the front door shut. Now I knew that she listened to my music just as I listened to hers. So I began to play tapes for both of us, wondering as I did which ones she had enjoyed most. I imagined our lives connected in spite of the thin walls and closed doors physically separating us. That's when I realised just how lonely I was. On the morning of the spring equinox, I warily climbed my stairs at dawn, eager for a hot shower and a long sleep. The pungent aroma of simmering rhubarb pulled me up the stairs two at a time. The irresistible smell was coming from Ruth's kitchen. I was a child the last time I'd smelt rhubarb cooking. I rested my head against her door, my mouth filled with saliva, and my glands ached from the aroma. I rested my head against her door, my mouth filled with saliva, and my glands ached from the aroma. Just as I got out my keys, Ruth opened her door. "I'm sorry," I said. "I'm not skulking, honestly. It's just been a long time since I smelled rhubarb cooking. It takes me back." Ruth nodded. "I'm making pies. Would you like some coffee?" I hesitated. We both faced each other stiffly, but I was so wary of our caution and defensiveness. "Thank you," I smiled. "Oh," I groaned as I walked into her kitchen. "It smells so good." Ruth smiled. "Well, I wish I could send you home with a small pie, but these are for friends in the hospital." I nodded. "When I was a kid, I used to eat it plain in a bowl with brown sugar." Ruth stirred the pot. "I'm sure there's enough for that." She stopped puttering and buried her hands in the pockets of her old-fashioned floral apron. I pointed to one of the small watercolour paintings on her kitchen wall. "I recognise the Queen Anne's lace, but what are those purple flowers?" "Asters," she said, "and that's goldenrod." I didn't usually like pictures of flowers, but these reminded me of the way flowers looked the first time I saw them. "These are really nice," I said. "Thank you. Did you paint them?" I asked. She nodded. "This is beautiful." I pointed to a framed handkerchief embroidered with colourful pansies. I always loved pansies, but they embarrassed me too, because that's what kids used to call me when I was a little girl. Ruth looked me in the eye and then went back to stirring the pot. "It's almost ready," she said. "Sit down. Would you like decaf so you can still sleep? You work nights, don't you?" I smiled and nodded. She had directed at least a little attention towards her neighbour, just as I had. "Some regular coffee would be great. I'm trying to stay up and clean on the weekends, but all I get is one layer deeper into the crud." Ruth's immaculate home inspired me. "Where are you from?" she asked me. "Buffalo." She smiled. "We are neighbours. You know where Canandaigua Lake is?" I nodded. "It was about 2 hours outside of Buffalo. I'm from Vine Valley." I frowned. "I never heard of Vine Valley. Is it farm country?" Ruth nodded. "Oh yes, vineyards." As she poured the coffee, I could smell cinnamon in it. "I miss Buffalo," I sighed. "Well, at least I miss the way it used to be. It was such a blue-collar town when I grew up. I could never have imagined that the plants would close and the people from the suburbs would move in and buy our houses dirt cheap." Ruth nodded and stirred her coffee. "I know, I saw life in the country change too. When the big wineries took over the flatland, it got harder to keep the little family vineyards and the hills alive. The call of the cities lured people to work and shop." I smiled. "I always thought country life didn't change much." Ruth laughed gently. "That's the view from the city." "I know how it felt to grow up in Buffalo, but it must have been hard growing up in such a small place." I wondered if what I'd said sounded too personal. Ruth sighed and leaned back in her chair. "I don't know if it was hard. I just know it wasn't easy. I'd be surprised if the population of the whole valley is more than 200. But in a way, that I think that's why I survived. We didn't have outside help for the vineyards. We all had to rely on each other. So those old bonds of cooperation weren't completely broken. I had a place there. But if I hadn't left, I would never have discovered Miles Davis, and my hair might always have been brown as dirt." Ruth got up and spooned soft rhubarb into a dish, then crumbled brown sugar over it. I slipped a spoonful into my mouth and sighed. I'd forgotten about taste. She frowned. "What do you mean?" "Oh, I eat just because I'm hungry. Fast food, takeout. I don't really taste it. But this tastes so good it makes me want to cry." Ruth nodded without smiling. "I cook for my own pleasure. I enjoy the preparing as much as the eating." I shrugged. "I'm not really set up to cook." She leaned forward. "This is very personal. You don't have to answer, but why don't you have curtains?" Well, my apartment is just where I sleep. Ruth shook her head. That's strange to me. I really live here. It's different working nights, I made excuses. I just crash when I get home. Besides, I lost everything in a fire last summer. I had really cared about fixing that place up and making a home out of it. Now I don't want to care. Ruth pursed her lips. You mean if you don't have anything you care about, then you won't have anything to lose? I nodded. Yeah, something like that. Ruth looked at me wistfully. Then I guess everything's already been taken from you. You've nothing left to lose, have you? I didn't know why she had finally decided to invite me in, but suddenly I felt stripped and vulnerable. So I took a last swig of coffee and the last tart mouthful of rhubarb and stood up to go. Thank you, I told her. That was a treat. Ruth saw me to the door. I go to the farmer's market at Union Square today. Can I get you anything? I unlocked my front door and shook my head. No, but thank you. Once inside, I threw open the windows and began a serious cleaning frenzy. Hours later, I furiously scrubbed the gunk under my sink while my music blasted. The knock at the door startled me, and I hit my skull on the pipes. I rubbed my head angrily as I opened the door. Ruth extended an armful of orange gladiolas. I thought you might like these. I heard you cleaning, and I hoped they would brighten up the place after all that hard work. I opened the door a little further. Thanks. I don't think I have anything to put these in. Ruth returned a moment later with a cut glass vase. She couldn't conceal her horror at my barren apartment. I shifted my weight uncomfortably. I haven't had time to shop for furniture or anything. I put the flowers in water and set them in the middle of the empty living room. They're really pretty, Ruth. I've bought women flowers before, but no woman ever gave me flowers. It's a beautiful thing to do. Ruth blushed. People need flowers. She turned to go and stopped. You know, I don't even know your name. Jess, she smiled. I had an uncle named Jess. Is it short for Jessie? I shook my head. Just Jess. I'll leave you to your cleaning, Jess. I nodded. Thanks for the flowers. When she left, I went back to scrubbing. Hours later, I sat down warily on the living room floor next to the flowers. Maybe Ruth had been right. Being afraid to lose anything I cared about meant I'd already lost it all. I heard another knock at my door, the second time in one day. It was Ruth. She extended a bundle of unbleached muslin. These are the curtains I used to have in my living room. My windows are the same size as yours, so I thought I'd offer them. It's up to you. I stood and looked at Ruth and at the gift in her large hands, and I said yes to both. A week later, I brought Ruth's vase back to her, filled with irises. Her smile was my reward. Do you have a vase? She asked me. I shook my head. Come in. Here, do you like this? She handed me a cobalt blue glass vase. I sighed. Oh, the colour is so intense it pulls me in. I can almost taste the colour. Ruth rested her fingertips on my cheek. You're hungry, Jess. Your senses are starved. I stared into the depth of the deep blue. If I made you dinner tonight, what would you eat? Fish? I laughed. Is fish food? Ruth shook her head. Oh no, you're not a meat and potatoes kind of guy, are you? I dropped my eyes. I'm not a guy, Ruth. She nodded. Well, then it has a little twist when I say that, doesn't it? All right, I'll make you red meat. But I warn you, I'm going to expand your appetite. What a wonderful offer, but why was she being nice to me now? I shopped that afternoon for new chinos and a dress shirt. I stopped at the farmer's market and bought Queen Anne's lace jelly, just because I loved the way it sounded. I found fat blueberries at Balducci's and a Miles Davis tape at Tower Records that I was sure she didn't have. Ruth laughed with pleasure at the small shower of gifts. These blueberries are going to be our dessert, and I think I'll use a spoonful of this jelly for our tea. But how did you know I wanted this concert tape? I smiled shyly. I'm your neighbour. Ruth laughed. That you are. Sit down. Her kitchen was layered with smells. Ruth set a huge salad in front of me. There were yellow and orange blossoms in the bowl along with greens I'd never seen before. My eyes filled with tears. Ruth, there's flowers in my salad. Ruth smiled. Those are nasturtium. They're beautiful, aren't they? Can I eat them? She nodded. I shook my head. I hate to eat this. It's like a work of art. Ruth sat down next to me. That's part of how starved you've been. I think you're afraid this is the last beautiful thing that's going to happen to you, and you want to hold on to it. How did you know that? Ruth smiled. I'm your neighbour. It's a wonderful salad, Jess. I made it just for you to enjoy. But the next one will be luscious too. I blushed and put down my fork. You know when your leg falls asleep, how it hurts when the circulation starts again? I'm not sure I want to hope. I don't want to get disappointed again. Ruth patted my arm. We both already know all about disappointment. Let's not anticipate it. She got up and put on the music I'd brought her. As I ate the salad, tears ran down my cheeks for no apparent reason. Ruth smiled. It's balsamic vinegar, isn't it wonderful? How could I explain why the tastes of nasturtium and balsamic vinegar on my tongue made me cry? I'm sorry, I worked my eyes. This is just why you didn't want to let me in, isn't it? Why are you being so nice to me now? Ruth put down her fork and covered my hands with hers. I'm sorry I was so cold. I misunderstood you. I thought you were frightened and confused, and I was afraid you'd sap my strength. After you backed off, I realised I couldn't figure you out. That's a very attractive quality in my book. You seemed to be much stronger and calmer than I'd first given you credit for. So I changed my mind. Ruth smiled. It's a woman's prerogative. What finally made you decide to let me in? Ruth squeezed my hand. The colour of my hair is my declaration to the world that I'm not hiding. It's a hard colour to stand behind, but I do it to celebrate my life and my decisions. Most people are embarrassed by the colour of my hair. It took a very special person to compare it to the colour of sumac. I laughed and picked at my salad. Do you know if I'm a man or a woman? No, Ruth said. That's why I know so much about you. I sighed. Did you think I was a man when you first met me? She nodded. Yes, at first I thought you were a straight man. Then I thought you were gay. It's been a shock for me to realise that even I make assumptions about sex and gender that aren't true. I thought I was liberated from all of that. I smiled. I didn't want you to think I was a man. I wanted you to see how much more complicated I am. I wanted you to like what you saw. Ruth brushed my cheek with her fingertips. I shivered. Well, I didn't understand right away, but I thought you were awfully cute and handsome and interesting looking. Even Ruth's words were gifts. I dropped my eyes so she couldn't see my hunger for her attention. Oh, Ruth, I wish we had our own words to describe ourselves, to connect us. Ruth stood up and opened the broiler. I don't need another label, she sighed. I just am what I am. I call myself Ruth. My mother is Ruth Ann. My grandmother was Anne. That's who I am. That's where I come from. I shrugged. I don't want another label either. I just wish we had words so pretty we'd go out of our ways to say them out loud. As Ruth set the plate down, I stared at the steak. What are those little sprigs of things on top? I asked. Sage. She spooned tiny carrots and miniature squash onto my plate. She opened the oven door and served me steaming bread and sweet butter. Every bite tasted like music in my mouth. Now we'll have the wonderful dessert you brought, Ruth said. She filled two earthen bowls with blueberries, drizzled them with heavy cream, and sprinkled them with sugar. I blinked away tears and squeezed her arm. Ruth, the words got stuck in my throat. She covered my hand with hers. I know all about hunger, Jess. She lifted her mug. To friendship? I clinked my mug against hers. Yes, I answered. To our friendship. I shopped for used furniture, the first sign of my own spring thaw. Ruth seemed more excited than I did as the set steady stream of deliveries arrived. Gradually, my rooms began to assume shapes. Ruth hung her framed handkerchief embroidered with pansies on my kitchen wall and gave me the tie quilt she'd made with her grandmother for my bed. But I really knew Ruth and I were becoming close when she admitted how much she wanted help repainting her apartment. It was an absolute pleasure to see the joy on her face as I covered her walls with fresh colours. She excitedly cut shelf paper while the cupboards were still tacky with white enamel. I enjoyed the complex layers of life in the city and longed to explore these nooks and crannies with Ruth. But we never left our apartment building together because of what she called her geometric theory. Two people like us in public are more than double the trouble. Instead, we brought each other little gifts from our daily travels. I gave her V.A. Lobosch, she gave me Keith Jarrett. I bought her Forsythia, she bought me Impatience. And after a while, we exchanged our tears and our frustrations as well. "Why, Ruth," I stormed around her kitchen, "why do heads turn when we walk down the street? Why are we so hated?" Ruth stopped scrubbing the inside walls of her stove. "Oh, honey, we've been taught to hate people who are different. It's been pumped into our brains. It keeps everybody fighting each other." I slumped in a chair. "I used to want to change the world. Now I just want to survive it." Ruth laughed. Her rubber gloves snapped as she pulled them off. "Well, don't give up just yet, honey. Sometimes things don't change for a long time, and then they catch up so fast it makes your head spin." I sighed. When I was growing up, I believed I was going to do something really important with my life, like explore the universe or cure diseases. I never thought I'd spend so much of my life fighting over which bathroom I could use. Ruth nodded. "Well, I've seen people risk their lives for the right to sit at a lunch counter. If you and I aren't going to fight for the right to live, then the kids coming up will have to do it." I leaned my head back against the back of the kitchen chair and laughed. "You are my pleasure, Ruth. You're the last ice-cold Coca-Cola in the desert." I flashed her a smile that clearly charmed her. I'd forgotten I could do that. That evening, we crawled out onto the fire escape and sat close to each other as the afternoon shifted to evening. I'd never held a body larger than mine before. The street below us was blocked off for a festival. Tiny lanterns strung up between booths of food, couples dancing in the intersection to a live mariachi band. "Ruth, if we lived in a world where we could be anything we wanted to be, what would you do with your life?" Ruth smiled wistfully. "Oh, I'd still sew. I'd dress people in their dreams so they could walk proudly down the street, and I'd cook for all the people who had ever been hungry. I wouldn't be afraid to leave my house. Oh, I'd love to explore this world. What about you, Jess?" I leaned my head back against the brick. "I think I'd be a gardener in a woods just for children. And when they came by, I'd sit and listen to their wonderings. And the ocean would be nearby. I'd live in a little house on the shore. At dawn, I'd strip off all my clothes and swim. At night, I'd sing a song about the way life used to be. It would be such a sad song, it would make the grown-ups nod and the children cry. But I'd sing it every night so that no one would ever confuse nostalgia with wanting to return." Ruth began to cry. "Oh, Jess, even in your dreams I can hear how much you hurt." I kissed her very red hair. "Jess, I had grown so comfortable with being alone. I forgot how lonely I am underneath. I have friends I love, like Tanya and Esperanza and the showgirls I sew for. But I feel so close to you. I can't explain it." I rocked her gently. "Ruth, if your life was set to music, what kind of instrument would be playing?" She snuggled against me. "A soprano saxophone." I smiled. "Because it's so sad." She shook her head. "No, because it's so evocative. What kind of instrument would play your music, Jess?" I sighed. "I think a cello." Ruth held me tight. "Because it's so sad?" I shook my head and looked out over the city. "No, because it's so complicated."